ॐ भरताय प्रतिबोधितां भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन कथितां पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतपर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीम् अम्ब त्वामनुसन्धधामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वैषिणी।
Nakaratritvam nakaramani
lokasya srijati prabhu lokasya srijati prabhu nakarma phala sanyogam svabhavastu pravartate nakaratritvam nakaramani lokasya srijati prabhu na karma phala sanyogam svabhavah tu pravartate. If you remember in verse 13, it says, having renounced all karmas by the mind means having renounced all karma through your knowledge, right? Because the physical body, the mind, the upadis that you have can't renounce karma. They are always doing karma. So the renunciation of karma is through jnana, is through knowledge. And that renunciation has to do with your recognition that I, the Atma, the Self, is free from karma and free from kartritvam, doership, and free from enjoyership, as we'll see in this next verse. So here, this is leading into it. So he says, having renounced all karmas, manasa, by the mind, means through knowledge. The sukham vashi, right? Those who having renounced all karmas through knowledge, they abide vashi, they abide happily, dehi, as the dehi, as the indweller of the body. Navadvade. I'm doing 13. I'm just reviewing 13, because 13 is going to go, is really moving into 14, because I want to just provide a context for 14. So he says, and this is the one that we worked on, one of the ones we worked on last week. Mm-hmm. So as the dehi dwelling, the dehi means the one who indwells the body, right? So that one indwelling in the body, resting easily in vashi. Vashi means having everything under your control. The mind, the karmendriyas, the organs of action, and the jnanendriyas, the sense organs, are under your control. It means they're not controlling you. They're under the control of the buddhi, right? And so that one abiding easily, restfully, happily in this nine-gated city. Remember the nine-gated city? This is an image that's often used because it shows there's entryways and exit ways into this body. This nine-gated city that has two eyes, that's two, ears, four, nostrils, six, seven is the mouth, and then the organs of excretion are two more. So that's the nine that they come up with. So that's just an image that's used for the physical body. So the one who's indwelling this city. So the idea is you indwell a city. You are not the city. You are the indweller of the city. Whatever's going on in the city is not what you are doing. It's what the city is doing. So like that, you indwell this body. Sometimes we look at the body as a temple, which is as the Atma, as Brahman, as Ishvara, as the Self, is indwelling this temple. That means there's someone in, not somebody who is. I'm not the physical body, I'm indwelling the physical body. So that's the dehi. And so here, now in this verse 13, it says, that dehi, jnani, being a jnani, because having renounced all karmas through one's knowledge, that one who indwells the body, then he says, kurvan, he indwells the body, kurvan, nakurvan, nakariyan. Nakurvan means not doing anything, nakariyan, not causing anybody to do anything. Neither do I do anything, nor do I cause anybody to do anything. So there, the idea is nakurvan, I myself don't do anything, but I could make all of you do something. The example is often used as a king who rules a kingdom. The king may not do anything. I'd be just sitting there nicely in his castle. But everybody is buzzing around doing things because of the orders of the king. So that's an example that's used in the Shastra often. Here, the Atma itself is not doing anything. The self is not acting, not doing anything. Nor is the self making others act. The self is not dishing out orders. You know, I don't do anything, but you do it. I ask you to do this. I ask you to do that. I impel you to do this. I impel you to do that. No, the Atma doesn't do anything, nor does the Atma, the self, cause anything to be done or cause you to do anything. So that's the verse that leads into this. So now he says, Nakartritvam. Kartatvam is doership. Karmani are, and we'll take it in two ways, either the actions, so there is no doership, nor the actions. Karmas can mean actions. Karmas can also mean the objects of actions, because in the grammar, the karta is for just a little bit of Sanskrit, for some of you have that. The karta is the subject, the one who does the action. The karma is the object of the action. So we can have karma, the word karma, either mean the object of the action when we're viewing it grammatically, or we can talk about karma, your actions. Right? So I am the doer of my actions, or I am the doer and these are the objects of my actions. Okay? So either way, it is fine. So, and if you read Swamiji's commentary, he talks about it in both ways. That's why I'm bringing this up. So, here, what it says here, though, is that Srijati Prabhu. Prabhu is the Lord. Prabhu means that one who is self-evident, self-effulgent. Prabhu usually is taken to mean self-evident and self-effulgent. It's a name for Ishwar. It's a name for the Atma. Okay? So, the Atma, here, Prabhu is the Atma, that one who is self-evident. The Atma na kartritvam srijati. The Atma, the self, doesn't create. The Atma is the one from whom the whole creation has come, is Ishvara. That Atma does not create doership, nor does the Atma create the actions, nor does the Atma create the objects of the action. Okay? Another way you can say it. Ishvara as the Atma, Ishvara as Brahman, right? If we're talking about Ishvara's self. Ishvara the Lord, who is the creator. Sridj means to create. So the Lord, who is the creator, the Lord does not create doership. The Lord doesn't create activity, nor the objects of action for the Atma. The Lord is the Atma, right? So Brahman doesn't create kartritvam, doership, or action, or the objects of action. Okay. Now it says in the next line, again, nor karma pala samyogam, nor the results of the karma, karma pala, nor the relationship, the samyoga, the bringing to yourself, the connection with the results of the action. So Lord doesn't create the karma, the karta, the doer, the karma, the action, the karma pala, the results of the action. That brings the karma and the karta and the karma together. The Lord doesn't create any of those three. Who does then? That's the problem. Right? If you say Bhagavan doesn't do it, the Atma doesn't do it, there is no such thing. The Atma is not doing that. They're not creating it. It is not happening for the Atma. But it's happening. So where is it happening? How is it is happening? It says, Svabhavastu pravartate. Hear what this is saying by svabhavaha. Svabhavaha means your own nature. Your own nature refers to what here in the context? The swabhava of the eyes is to see, right? The swabhava, the nature of the ears, are to hear. The nature of the sense of touch is to feel, etc. So the swabhava is each one of the sense organs. Each sense organ has its swabhava. It has its activity. It has its field of its activity, its field of activity. The organs of action, the hands, their swabhava is to grasp. The feet, their swabhava is to walk. Whatever else the feet do. Okay? The sense of speech, the organ of speech, its swabhava is to talk. The organ of sexuality, is its swabhava is to procreate. Of excretion, these are all the karmendriyas, is to excrete. So these karmendriyas, they have their own sphere. Their own sphere of activity. They have their own kartritvam, boktritvam. Right? I say kartritvam. They've got their own kartritvam. They're doing things. But I mean not kartritvam. They're doing things. The activity belongs to them. Right? Mind. Now this is where it gets really kind of important and personal to understand. The mind has its own swabhava. Its swabhava is to think, to feel. If we look at the manas has, its swabhava is all of the emotions in the fluctuating mind. The buddhi, its swabhava is the intellect, is thinking, right? So thinking, emotions, these are all the swabhava of the mind. That's where the activity is generated, the activity is born, the karmas are produced, the karmapala is happening, all within this sphere of what is actually mitya. All of these upadis belong to the sphere of mitya. In other words, it is true they're dependent for their being on the self. But they themselves are a product of maya. They themselves belong to this creation. You know, to understand mitya, a good way to understand mitya, for me anyway, is to understand is to use the analogy of the dream. If you think of the dream comes as a whole manifestation, and your body, mind, sense organs, everything about you that makes you an individual different from another person. Like what makes me different from you is our bodies are different. Our sense organs are different. Our minds are different. Our intellect is different. Our experiences are different. Our emotions are different. It would be the same in the dream. This whole manifestation, the body, the mind, the sense organs, the moods, emotions, the I thought, even my I thought is different from your thought, all are different. But all of these differences, these different bodies, etc., are all part of one manifestation, which we call the dream. Right? That manifestation, that one infinite manifestation, we'll say, that we call the dream, in this realm, we call Ishvara. In this physical body, mind, sense, organs, is all part and parcel of Ishvara. And this body has its own swabhava. It has its own nature, its own capacities. My mind has its own swabhava, its own nature, own capacities. My sense organs do, my organs of action. Those capacities, right? Those forms, those namarupas, those upadis, belong to the dream, belong to the creation, as do the activities. Now, if you jump back to the dream, is the Atma, the one from whom the dream has manifest, is the Atma doing anything? Is it a king in the city of the dream saying, now, I'm watching you do this, I'd like you to behave in this way, you know? Or I'd like you to think about this, or I want you to walk over here. When you think about it, your Atma, your being, the one from whom the dream has come, really has no kartritvam or boktritvam. There's no doership, there's nothing except being. The Atma, in reference to the dream now, is only being. It is Satchit, it is Prabhu, it is self-evident, evident, conscious me. That self-evident, conscious me is not giving any directions. There's no direction, there's no creation. Now, think of it even this way, in reference to the dream, because this is really fits very well for how we understand Ishvara. the self, yourself, the Atma, in reference to the dream, the Atma is the self of the dream. Right? There's no part of that dream that's away from your being. The consciousness that every creature in the dream enjoys is me. The being that the entire dream enjoys is me. And when the dream appears, it's enjoying my reality. When it disappears, nothing has happened to my being. This is an important phenomenon. You should notice this next time you wake up from a dream. You wake up from the dream, the reality of the dream is gone, but the reality is not gone. The nama-rupas, the names and forms of the dream go away, but the being, the truth of the dream remains. The being of the dream, the consciousness of the dream, the self of the dream. That's why there's no death experience, there's no loss of me, there's no loss of anything, in fact, except for this mirage of, in a sense, mirage of nama-rupas that appeared to be me just through superimposition. But in reality, there was no me that was participating or engaging in that dream in any other way except to be its very being, its very essence. You see what I'm saying? Its very being, its very essence. That's all it's doing. And that's not doing. So I'm not going to say that's all it's doing. That is all it is being. And that being is who I am. And this constancy of being, which is myself, is what, in terms of gaining knowledge, I need to be able to differentiate from this Maya projection. From this projection of all of these names and forms, like a dream, I have to be able to see this Ishwara, this manifest knowledge, you know, as having for its reality the being which is myself, in the same way that the dream has for its reality the being that is myself. And now, since that being is you, you can recognize now, because we're talking about you, we're not trying to make you go anywhere to realize something other than yourself. It's just a matter of differentiating the conscious me, your own presence, from this these changing manifestations, which themselves are engaged in all kinds of activity. If these upadis, body, mind, sense organs, are engaged in activity, and the mind being such that it is enjoying consciousness, the mind can say, right? The mind can say, I am that activity. I, the conscious being, in this form, I, the conscious being, because the mind is enjoying consciousness, I, the conscious being, am doing whatever the mind is doing. So what would you say? The mind would say, I am the conscious being who's thinking. This is what we call superimposition, anyonya adhyasa. I, the conscious being, am thinking. Then what happens is that the kartritvam, the doership, has now been attributed to the Atma, which in fact has never done anything. I, the conscious being, am in the form of this body. This body is me. It's the mind now identifying with the body and identifying with consciousness on one end, the body on the other. Then if the mind says, I am the body, then I grasp, I walk, I talk. Whatever the body can do, I do. And so the kartritvam, the activities that belong to the upadi, the activities that belong to the body, then become my activities, right? So that's why he says, the Atma in this verse, and we'll flesh it out a little bit in the next verse, that's why he says here, the self doesn't create or doesn't do anything. For the self, there is no doership. There are no objects, there is no activity, there are no objects of action, and there's no karmapala. So you can say there's no kartritvam. The self doesn't create or bring into existence any type of kartritvam. It doesn't become a doer. It doesn't engage in action. And for it, there are no karmapala. There's no results of the actions. Self doesn't do that. Who is doing it then? Who is doing it? The upadis are doing it. This is the swabhava of the upadis. So now, think of it in terms of the dream. The whole dream is existing in yourself. Right? It comes from you, is sustained by you, and resolves into you. You're not doing anything. But from the standpoint of the dream character, who has your being for itself, this is important. Whole dream is there. This room is a dream. There's 12 people in the room, however many. And each one in the room is saying, I am, I am, I am, I am, I am. I am this character. I am this person. I am this person. I am this person. I am sitting on the floor. I'm listening to this class. You know, my knee hurts. I need to do this and that tomorrow. Right? Every character, all of these activities are taking place because they are taking place from the standpoint of the upadhis. And each character will say, and you know, I am the conscious being, I am the conscious being, I am the conscious being. But in reality, that isn't the truth. In reality, it's the truth in this sense that there is no other conscious being. When they say the conscious being that they're enjoying, that conscious being is Brahman. But is that conscious being which I am doing anything which the upadhis are doing? See, am I doing what the upadhi is doing? Am I doing what the body is doing? Is the self, the conscious being, performing the act of doing what the body is doing? That's the differentiation that you have to make. Say no. It's not doing anything. The creation comes from me, sustained by me, resolves into me. I am the self of the creation, but I am the self of the creation, but I don't modify myself to become the creation. That's the thing to understand. Another way to play with this, to really kind of get it, if you can get it and really understand it subjectively, you can then move to understand it objectively, just to understand the relationship. Like, for instance, if you use your imagination, you imagine something. You don't become the imagination, right? You have the imagination. The imagination totally enjoys you for its being. It's totally dependent on you. You are the self and the substance, the conscious existent being of the imagination. And from the standpoint of the imagination, there's all kinds of activity going on within the imagination. But have you become the imagination? No. The imagination comes from you. It has your being as its stability, as its truth, and it goes back into you. Now, if that's the truth, you can practice just in reference, if you can get that, in reference to your imagination, you can practice this with your using your imagination to differentiate the changeless presence of yourself from the manifest knowledge that you are creating, the imagination that you're creating. Just to notice that there's, in a sense, two things happening there. There's the stability of your own presence and the activity and nama-rupa, the names and forms, the colors and all of that, and the activity of the imagination. There's two things happening in one place. There's one being, which is stable. There's one truth. And there's a manifestation of knowledge that totally enjoys the being of that truth. But does not have the capacity to change it. That is your constant experience. Why is that important? Is because unless a person wakes up to that fact, there is no you don't enjoy, from the standpoint of your mind, any type of a constant self, because the identification is with the body, mind, sense organs. Right? And so you don't have any differentiation of a constant being who is there, a self that you are, that is indestructible, that's not subject to the vagaries of the mind, kind of the things coming and going and changing. That self you're not awake to. And that is the first thing that's going to happen. Right? We have to recognize that we have a self. Otherwise the self is one of the body, mind, sense organs. And so here, what he's working, Bhagavan is working on here, is to really make clear that differentiation, to differentiate that self, so that you recognize that there is not only, there's no doership And now there's no enjoyership. That's what the next verse is about. Let's do the next verse. Nadatte kasyachit papam. Nadatte kasyachit papam. Nachayva sukritam vibhu. Nachayva sukritam vibhu. Ajnane navritam jnanam. Ajnane navritam jnanam. Tena muhyanti jantavaha. Tena muhyanti jantavaha. Now he goes on to talk about the bhoktritvam. Na adatte kasyachit papam. Na cha eva sukritam vibhu. Ajnanena avritam. Avritam, avritam jnanam, tena muhyanti jantavaha. This is as though, from the Bhoktritvam. Vibhu, the Lord, who is all pervasive, the one from whom this manifest creation comes, it's the Atma. Na adatte kasyachit papam. The Lord, or the Atman, the Self, that one who is self-evident, self-manifest, that Lord, that Atma, doesn't take on, adatte, doesn't receive, papa means sin, papa, the papa karmas, doesn't receive papa from anybody. The Atma is not touched by anybody's papa. Nachayava sukritam. The Atma is not touched by anybody's punya. The Atma is not, you know, being punished or suffering from the effects of papa, nor is the Atma suffering or receiving the effects of punya, of anybody's papa, of anybody's punya. You know, this is moksha, right? It's moksha, really, to realize that not you yourself, you mean the upadi, the body, your mind, your sense organs, all of your actions, everything that you do, nothing that you do is received by the Atma, good or bad. Nothing that you do. The Atma does not become a papi, a sinner, nor does the Atma become a saint. The Atma remains the Atma. The Self remains the Self. Think of it again in the dream. You have to take a character in the dream and you're really bad. You're just creating so much papa for yourself. And in fact, all of the papa that you're doing is starting to create all kinds of havoc in that dream creation. Is the Atma becoming a papi? The Atma, the one from whom this entire manifestation has come, is that Atma being affected by the papa? So, no. Is the Atma being affected by the punya? No. The punya and the papa belong to Maya. The punya and papa belong to the Maya. The upadis are affected by punya and papa, right? The upadi means your body, your mind, your sense organs, they are affected by the actions that you do. But the Atma, which illumines all of that and which is the self of all of that, is not affected in any way. You know? And that's an amazing thing to understand. Mm. It means that you are not at your core. Being who you are is Ishwara. At your core, the self, the Atma. That self is Atma. It's not in Christianity, because of Christianity in this country, this is important to understand. Who you are at your core is the Atma, is not a sinner. It is not somebody, not something, a self to be improved. It's not a self to be purified. It's not a self that needs to gain antakarana shuddhi. Right? The Atma doesn't need to gain antakarana shuddhi. The Atma is never going to change. It's never something that's going to become more pure or impure. Right? So it's the Atma is not something that requires moksha. Right? The Atma is moksha. The very nature of the Atma is liberated. It's never not been liberated. Liberate bondage and liberation don't apply to the Atma. Punya papa don't apply to the Atma. Becoming, changing, modifying, purifying, you know, none of this applies to the Atma. So the self is as it is, and nobody can do anything about that. Nor can anybody cause it. Nobody can do anything about it, and the Atma itself cannot receive punya and papa. You can say, well, nobody can do anything about it, but the Atma, you know, itself can take all of this on. No. How is it going to take it on? How is something which itself is just pure consciousness, pure being, with what limbs, with what upadis, is it going to take on all of this punya and papa? Think about it in terms of the dream. You know, how can the activities of the dream, the punya, the papa, all of the karmas of the dream, how can they, in a sense, reach the Atma? It's a kind of a funny way to say it. It's kind of like saying, how can all of the, let me put it like this way, just to understand the Satyam Nitya. You imagine an ocean. How can all of the storms and the activities of the ocean, how can they reach the water? How can they reach the water? How can they affect the water? They already are fully the water, right? But the names and forms themselves have no being apart from the water. Maybe even better is thinking about the relationship between the rope and the snake. How can something like the snake that's projected on the rope, whatever it should do, whatever it should do, how can it touch the rope? There's no different orders of reality, whereas the one is totally dependent for its being on the other. The best way to understand it, because we use rope snake, we use wave ocean, but the best drishtanta we have for it is dream and imagination. The reason is that dream and imagination are, you are your little Ishwara. Right? You experience the subjective Ishwaratvam. You have your own, what Ishwara has in total measure, right? Because Ishwara is the entire infinite manifestation is Ishwara that includes all of our bodies, minds, sense organs. But you get a little, you know, mini experience of that, Ishwara. Because what's interesting here, the Atma as the self is the same. There's only one Atma. Atma itself, the self itself is free of time and space. So the self that you are, this conscious me is Ishwara. In fact, this conscious me that I am, that is you. It's not part of you or anything like that. There's no time and space in reference to the conscious being that you are. And so this innermost me, this constant being, by innermost, I mean everything else is mithya, is maya, because it belongs to the creation, it can be objectified. Innermost means that conscious being which can't be objectified into an object. Everything else in this creation can be objectified, like everything I see is an object. This body I can objectify, subject, object, I can describe it, I can see it. My thoughts I can objectify, I can describe them, I can see them, I can watch them change. My moods, my emotions, my knowledge, even the ahankara, the I notion, I can objectify, I can talk about it, I can watch it come and go. But yourself, you can't objectify it, because then who's objectifying it? Right? So consciousness is known, it's self-evident because it is you. Right? Consciousness is consciousness. It doesn't need to be objectified in order to be known, it's self-evident. So there's no objectification of that, and that is why we say pratyagatma. It is innermost only in terms of the fact of all of these other things being objectified. So we say that innermost atma, right? Itself not objectifiable, is free from time and space because it's not an object within time and space. It's free from time and space. And if all of us are doing this objectification, can all participate in the same objectification, we are all left with the pratyagatma, which itself is free from time and space, which itself cannot be objectified, And so that Pratyekatma, that innermost self, that can't be objectified, is the truth of each one of us. It is the one truth. Right? It is the one truth that we're left with. That self is Ishvara. That self is the Atma. That self is Brahman. It is the self from which this whole manifest creation comes. Now, what is wonderful about that is, as an upadhi, to, in terms of really understanding this knowledge, in terms of an upadhi, this body, mind, sense organs is an upadhi of that one self. That is the self of Ishvara. See that? It is, this body, mind, sense organs are, now if I just take even my mind, is an upadhi, is a conditioning adjunct of this one pratyagatma, of this one self. Okay? This infinite creation, the maya upadhi, is an upadhi, a conditioning adjunct of this pratyagatma. Okay? Now, every part of this manifestation is this body, this body, this body, this body, this body, all enjoy the same pratyagatma. Each body has within it a mind which mimics in itself in a limited, to a limited degree, is capable of manifesting a creation. And your mind, each individual mind, has for itself what? The pratyagatma. Right? Every mind, each mind, has for itself the pratyagatma, the innermost self. Ishvara has for itself this manifest creation as an infinite mind. What is itself? Pratyagatma. What is the relationship between the pratyagatma and the infinite manifest creation? There is no difference between that relationship between the pratyagatma and the infinite manifest creation that we call Ishvara, and that same pratyagatma and its relationship to the mini manifestation of the mind. Because in the mini manifestation of the mind, what we call the upajñaha, limited knowledge, there is one self with a manifestation of your projected universe. For Ishvara, there is the one self with a manifestation of the infinite universe. That's why Swamiji has gone to say, using the term manifest knowledge for Ishvara. Manifest knowledge is the same as saying an infinite mind, in a sense. The manifestation of knowledge, right, means that manifestation is like an infinite thought. It comes from, just like if I say now, for you thinking of your mind, I ask you now to think, to imagine a meadow, the unmanifest meadow, the unmanifest meadow knowledge, which is there in unmanifest condition in the pratyagatma, now becomes manifest meadow, or manifest meadow universe. Right? You see that? Unmanifest, manifest. The infinite creation is Ishvara, unmanifest knowledge, manifest knowledge, but on an infinite scale. For you, your meadow is limited. Your knowledge is limited. But it comes into manifestation. And what is the truth of that manifestation? Is the pratyagatma, the existence, the being, which you are, is the very self of that manifestation. That same self is the self of the infinite manifestation, which is Ishvara, of which this body, mind, sense organs are a part. So when we're talking about Ishvara, there's a what we call vyavahara, or an empirical reality. Right? There's an empirical reality. But this empirical reality from Ishvara's standpoint is just an infinite manifestation of knowledge. If you have a limited manifestation of knowledge, if I say, imagine a meadow, and there's creatures walking around, and I say, put some people in the meadow. Now there's people in the meadow, and birds and bees and all of these things in the meadow. Those people all have limited manifestation of knowledge compared to your infinite manifestation of knowledge in reference to your meadowness, in reference to the people who are within the creation that you've imagined. Right? So the thing to play with that, to understand it, you'll understand what Maya is. You'll understand Satyam and Mitya. This is Satyam and Mitya, right there. The relationship between the manifest knowledge in your mind and the Atma. That is Satyam Mitya. The mind has no being apart from the Atma, from the Self, and the Self is its truth. Right? The Self is changeless. The mind is totally dependent on it for its being. Totally dependent. The snake is totally dependent on the rope. Totally. The rope is not dependent on the snake. My imagination, my mind is totally dependent on me. I'm not dependent on it. The mind comes into manifestation, goes out of manifestation. I remain the same. The universe is the same. It's Ishwar, except universe were now jumping realities. I am in this universe. This body, mind, sense organs are part of Ishwara. But the whole Ishwara, the whole infinite manifestation, enjoys the Pratyagatma, which is me. So I am Ishwara. I am Ishwara, not from the standpoint of the Upadhi. I say the Upadhi is Ishwara. I can say that the Upadhi is Ishwara. The body is the Ishwara. The mind is Ishwara. The sense organs are Ishwara. But I have to be able to go like this. This body is Ishwara. The mind is Ishwara. The sense organs are Ishwara. The space is Ishwara. The table is Ishwara. Right? I have to be able to say all of this is Ishwara. This body, mind, sense organs, yes, it is Ishwara. And you are Ishwara also. And otherwise, I, as a jiva, take myself to be Ishwara. I have to see that all of this manifest knowledge is Ishwara and has for its being the Pratyagatma. That's why the Pratyagatma, the innermost self, we say is Brahman, is infinite. The Pratyagatma, the innermost self, is Brahman, the infinite self. That's what we mean by Brahman. The innermost self is the infinite self. The Pratyagatma is Brahman. Innermost self is the infinite self. And so here in these verses, the whole emphasis is on this recognition that this Pratyagatma, which is Brahman, has no kartritvam, no bhoktritvam. But because of aviveka, because of the lack of discrimination, the body and what belongs to the swabhava, what is the nature of the body, the mind, sense organs, the nature of the maya, the nature of the creation, that is superimposed upon the atma by ignorance. So in the second line of this, he says, ajnanena avritam jnanam. Knowledge, and here knowledge is one's viveka, viveka jnanam, one's discriminative knowledge, is covered by ignorance. That discrimination is not there. The reality is there, but the knowledge of that reality is not there. It's covered by this ignorance. Then he says, tena, by that, muhyanti jantavaha. By that, because of that, the people are deluded. Jantavaha means people, beings. All of us are deluded because of that. Because of what? Because of that ignorance which covers this viveka, that covers this discriminative knowledge. Or jnanam is taken either as viveka jnanam, discriminative knowledge, or you take it as the manas, as the mind. The mind is covered by ajnanam, by ignorance, or that discriminative knowledge is blocked by ajnanam. That is what's causing this delusion. Because in fact, the Atma, the Self, the Pratyagatma that you are, is the infinite Self. It is the infinite changeless Self from which this whole, which is the truth of this whole creation. The Atma is not becoming anything, not doing anything, not receiving anything. It is absolutely pure as it is and can never be sullied or changed in any way. And that Self is free. I am free. The Atma is free. I'm completely free. There is no problem for me at all. There isn't. There's nothing. No problem. The problem is brought about by the ajnanam on the part of the jiva, mind. The ajnanam is covering the mind. Stopping is covering that viveka jnanam, which makes me have this anyonya adhyasa, this mutual superposition on the body, mind, sense organs. And therefore, and by because of that, I identify with all of the Kartritvam and Bhoktritvam, the doership and the enjoyership, that these upadis are enjoying.
Mm.
So, let's stop there.
Wow.
Just take a minute. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.